Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, John Yurkovich in the building. The important questions being answered here, Yurk. Who do you got in the Drake and Kendrick debate?
I don't care.
we got beef in hip hop, so Yurk. We got beef in hip hop.
Beef in hip hop always gets too dangerous, doesn't it?
Not always. Coast, sometimes East it Coast? Keeps. Sometimes it keeps the bar.
I remember the '90s. West Coast, East Coast.
This is more West Coast Toronto.
What was this? Yeah, Canada.
West Coast Canada beef. A little different.
I'll be honest. I don't care. I beat the crap out of each other. I don't care.
I love the fact that you know that the beef is happening. I'm not gonna lie, it's happening.
Yeah. Why? Well, and then again, you said I said that it ended in death before. It's gunshots outside of a home.
Yeah, that is. This is true.
We don't know who shot the. Was it one of Drake's people shooting it outside his home, or was it Kendrick Lamar?
I believe one of the security ended up getting shot. So I hope he's okay in critical condition.
But you see what I said?
Yeah.
The point is that if you don't give a rat's ass about people warring with each other, then who cares? Maybe it'll disappear and go away. I don't care.
I just love the fact that he had an opinion on it. Yeah. Yurk's got an opinion on anything you ask him about. Well, there we go.
I know it's that's how we do. I know it's happening, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Keeping the eye.
You want to beat the crap out of each other, beat the crap out of each
other. Keeping the eye to the streets. Let's hope it doesn't get to that because Kendrick coming in about 5'4", Drake a little bit taller. He's about
is he?
Yeah, Drake got about
a little beef here.
He might have
Drake's
have
a little bit beef here.
5'8", 5'9" for Drake.
Oh, tall.
Not massive, but you know, tall. In the gym. You know what I mean?
You know, the Lord always does giveth. If he's not going to give you height, he'll give you a talent.
we still talk about
is that right?
We still talk about the rap game here?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying if the Lord's not going to give you height, he'll give you talent. 5'4 and 5'8", you know, you haven't really been blessed. You're not a Scandinavian Viking by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, the rumor around Drake is that he has been blessed. That was the
well, good for him.
Going around the old timeline a month ago, 2 months ago, something like that.
Good
hey,
for
man,
him.
Let's keep this thing. Let's get back into this. I love that we can start this off with anything. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, Chicago Bears Podcast. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and showing love. Yurk, we got rookie mini camp coming up. We have actual kind of football being played on the field.
Yeah, but they're playing in shorts and helmets. It's not really football at all. But it'd be nice. This is where the development starts to happen of relationships. The development of this team starting to come together, starting to figure out who they are, figuring out why they want to play for each other and why they want to play for Eberflus. So that's what this time is here for. The quarterback's got a lot to learn. Young players got a lot to learn. You want to be able to go out there and you want to be able to just play and not think. And early on, they're going to be thinking and not doing as much playing. So this is the process where you start the repetitions, the repetitiveness of the verbiage and the words. That way, once you get to training camp, everybody's got a chance to compete for whatever spot they're going to get.
Absolutely love it. The Bears actually go out and sign a good group of undrafted rookies. I mean, 9 undrafted rookies here. Brendan Bates, Theo Benedict, Carl Jones. He's a linebacker. Jamari Croma, defensive end out of James Madison. Peter LeBlanc, wide receiver out of Louisiana Lafayette. Keith Randolph Jr., defensive tackle out of Illinois. Big boy. We've seen him a couple times.
He was Oppo of the first round pick.
Yes. Yes, big boy. Austin Reed, quarterback out of Western Kentucky. Reddie Stewart, who they actually signed and gave him a little money on top, a little scratch to start off, 12-5 to start, second highest signing bonus outside of Tyson Bagent, who also made the team last year. And Ian Wheeler, running back out of Howard, who actually signed for, I want to say, a 3-year deal for about $2.3 million. A little different than when they were signing undrafted rookies back in your day, Yurk, a little bit. $2.3 million for an undrafted rookie. They were.
Well, we had 12 rounds back in the day.
Oh well, yeah.
More opportunities to be drafted back then. But for those guys in my draft that were undrafted, Tony Siragusa, 12 rounds undrafted. John Yurkovich, 12 rounds undrafted, and of course John Randall, 12 rounds undrafted.
What a group!
So there's always players there, and that's the one thing you can tell these guys. They probably would have been drafted normally,
right?
Back when there were 12 rounds, but the teams got tired of paying out the bonuses. So they said, let's just do it with seven. We'll sign everybody else's free agents. And that's when everybody started to cut their drafts down too. So, you know, that's the way it works. But there's a number of positions open. If you show you can play, you show you got an affinity for special teams, they'll find a way to keep you.
And that was the question, right? What do you say to these guys to kind of, hey, listen, there's an opportunity here for you to go get it. And I love the fact that the Bears still addressing positions, kind of, right? I mean, like still looking at some of these young guys and saying, maybe we can find a diamond in the rough for something we didn't address during the season.
This is how simple it is. I got one guy making $3 million, and I got another guy making $600,000. If the guy that's playing $600,000 can play as close to possible as the guy making $3 million, I'll get rid of the guy making $3 million. I'll keep the kid making $600,000. Just it. That's economics. That's the way it works.
What's the mindset coming into rookie minicamp as the undrafted guy? What is that? Just
be seen and not heard. Ooh. Ask questions. Be seen and not heard. Ask questions and let your play dictate what people think of you, period. Don't be late. Don't give them an excuse to get rid of you. I've seen guys never even get the chance because they showed up late, they missed something, they weren't where they were supposed to be, and boom, the next thing you know, they're out the door trying to sign on with another team.
What was it about the good kid, John Yurkovich, that enamored?
I made Shula laugh. My first team
that was the move?
I made Shula laugh. That's right. I was a little bit of a jokester and a prankster, and I made Shula laugh. I think Shula liked that. 90 was the year they weren't coming with the practice squad because the players sued them because they limited the amount of money you can make to $1,000. Well, you're making $1,000 a week in New York. What are you making? You're not making anything in New York.
You're having an apartment, so maybe?
They brought the practice squad back in week four of that first my first year in 1990, and then they kept the practice squad for the rest of the time here. It's still 40 years later. You still got yourself a practice squad. So, I mean, that was kind of a nice thing. It came in 1989. Now it's still here. The other thing I did was, you know, you're going to get messed with. You're a rookie. So they wanted cold beer after every practice. So I went to the local store, like a Dick's Sporting Goods or something. Yeah, yeah. I got the biggest styrofoam cooler you could find. And it was styrofoam. It wasn't much McCall. You know, it was just a big cooler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'd put two cases of each. So it was like four cases of beer could hold. And I made a deal with the equipment guy that he would empty the ice and fill the ice up every day. And obviously he can partake in the beers and everything like that. So I also bought cheap lawn chairs. That way they can set up outside of the Econoline 150 conversion van. And that would be in the back. We'd open it up. We'd all sit like gentlemen in the parking lot around the thing. And we'd all have beers. Between dinner, going to dinner, after dinner, before films. So, you know,
Whatever it takes, man.
Then they sent me someplace that I shouldn't have been.
They sent you to the hood here?
Louis Oliver, played at the University of Florida, and Jarvis Williams, two safeties, said, Yerk, you're going on a rib run. You're going to pick up some ribs.
Yeah,
now, some ribs. They've been in Miami.
Right.
They know where they're going. They gave me the address, knock on the door, take the money and put it through the bars. They're expecting you. They're going to open the front door. Then you're going to get this. It's going to be a cooler full of stuff.
Right.
He goes, you bring it back. He says, make sure you have honey. He says, make sure they put honey in there. I said, I don't know what the hell it's all. I said, hey, they said to make sure you got honey. He goes, the honey's in there. I got yelled at. And I said, all right. Got into my little Yugo. Because I rented a small car. I think it was a Yugo. Puttered around, got back to the facility, brought it in, and boom. They paid for it, right?
Right.
I just had to go pick it up. And then happiest people in the world I ever seen.
I was going to say. What,
you should say.
I thought you were about to tell me that there was no honey in there.
No. Everything was good. I didn't get a rip. Not one. No, I went and picked them up. But all the food was for them.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. So... But no, I went and did what they needed me to do.
Right.
And the one time the veterans, Barry Krause, Mike Reichenbach, who had come from Philadelphia, he had played in Buddy Ryan's defense, but Seth Joyner had come in. Seth learned under Mike, got control of the defense, and Mike was expendable. So Mike ended up coming down there. Cliff Odom, we had John Offerdahl, Hugh Green, and EJ Jr. It was like a who's who. Of 80s linebackers, all of a sudden they're all together on one team. And so about three, four of us went to the Club Rolex.
The Club Rolex.
The Club Rolex on Northwest something 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 Avenue.
Was this a club or was this a gentleman's
club? It was a gentleman's club.
All righty, here we go.
Yeah, and it was after practice, so we went to the Club Rolex. You know, please check your weapons at the door. And then we are in there, and we lost track of time, and it's like, we got to go. So we get there, and we're late to the meeting. They're all in. Shula's at the front. Two of the assistant coaches, like Tony Nathan was an assistant coach. And we had a special teams coach was Larry Seipel, but there was another special teams coach also. And he saw us, and Tony saw us, so we just snuck into the back of the room quietly. And Sakanovic was my coach, and Alvin Dottie, they weren't in that first meeting. The big one with coach where you go over today's film, they were separated already into our rooms to go over just defensive film. And we're going to go over our film. So they didn't see us come in late, but then Nathan's like, guys, quit screwing around. And then he pulled me aside and he goes, you got no room to screw around. You can't screw around because to make an example to them, they'll get rid of you. He goes, so you got to do it right. So that's the only time I even risked it, and it was like early in the afternoon. It wasn't even late at night. It wasn't a night curfew. It was an early afternoon curfew.
It just got a little away from you.
I wanted to run with the fellas, and then me and Sammy Smith. Remember the running back, Sammy Smith, out of Florida State.
Absolutely,
we just go to dog track all the time
during camp.
Sammy Smith liked to gamble, man. He liked to gamble. So I'd gamble too, but I wouldn't gamble heavy. I mean, I just play my 183, you know, trifecta box or exacta box on the horses because usually the one and the outside horse, 187, 183, you know, 713, those were the combinations that usually came in if you took a look at it. So, you know, I'd make those little plays and this and that. But I was a single guy down in Miami. I'd go to Calder. I'd go to race course and catch late daily double all the time before Gulfstream. Gulfstream opened up in January, so you had to go to Calder race course. So I had fun. It was a good time down in Miami. I should have gone to a High Life Fontan. Never went to a High Life Fontan. I didn't know how to bet it.
Right.
So if you don't know how to bet it, how do you gamble on it? You know, that's kind of the problem. I wouldn't know what made somebody win.
Right.
What's the winning shot? You know, who's playing well? That kind of thing. Who's going through a divorce? Bet against the guy going through a divorce. You know, I had no information on it. So
you got to get that insider down there.
There's plenty of things to do in Chicago. So you're a young man. You come to Chicago. You see everybody going to the sporting events, whether it's the Chicago Sky, whether it's up with the Cubs, bouncing around doing other things. There's plenty of casinos where you can go ahead and find yourself getting to a little bit of harm. But, you know, it's Chicago. Have fun.
Yeah.
The summer is upon us. Just be ready to go in July. That's it. End of July, beginning of August. You got to be ready to rock. They got the Hall of Fame game, so they come to camp a week earlier than everybody else.
Is that going to be an advantage for them, you think?
I played in two of them.
Yeah.
So it's fun that you get a chance to do it. A fifth game gives younger players a bigger opportunity to play.
Yeah,
we already know how Eberflus doesn't like playing his veterans for some crazy reason or not. He doesn't like to play his veterans in some games. Everybody just get the game off. You know, I think Caleb Williams needs reps. I hope he doesn't do what he did last year.
I was going to ask you, does that have to change this year? There's so much new. So much different.
My biggest complaint is the way they practice and the way he played it, you know, what he did in the preseason games. That was my biggest complaint about him last year. It irked me a little bit. So hopefully they take things a little bit more seriously early on. And that would be nice. There's risk of injury all the time. It's not once, it's twice, football. Or somewhere else. It's football.
Yeah.
There's going to be a risk of injury. So that's just part and parcel with the game. That happens. So if some guy's going to get injured, that's just the way it's going to be.
I like the list of guys that they're bringing in. You know, the young guys. I think that there's some opportunity here. I mean, the two guys that stand out to me, and it's because of who Flus is, Reddy Stewart. Stands out. He's a DB out of Troy. I watched a little bit of his tape after the Bears signed him to the contract. Gets after it, Yerk. He's on the move all the time. Never stops. Doesn't give a lot of space. Smaller guy though. Smaller build. And Keith Randolph Jr. Those are the two that I'd really like to see make the team because I think those are two impact positions. You can never have enough DBs as we saw last year. We end up losing Jalen Johns for a little bit. Losing Jaquan Brisker for a little while there. And then Are you confident in this season coming in at the defensive tackle position? I think that's the question a lot of people have. I feel good about Montez Sweat. The rest of the line, I have a ton of questions on. Yeah, like, and I need to see more. I need to see more as we hit the floors.
Well, they addressed the defensive end in the fifth round, right?
I hope so. I think he's more of a pass. He's a unique type of player.
Well,
he's a pass rush specialist.
Right. He's a big guy that needs to learn how to play the run if you're going to be a three down player. Yes. That's just the way it is.
Yes.
If he came in here like Mark Anderson did and gave you 12 sacks in his rookie year, would you be happy with it?
Absolutely.
And then when they tried to play Mark Anderson as a regular defensive lineman playing three downs, what happened?
Not as good.
Well, he was an abject failure.
Yeah.
Because when you go out there,
Ngakoue last year,
when you go out there simply to rush the passer and only rush the passer, that's all you worry about.
Right.
You pin your ears back and you get after it. When you've got to play football, then life becomes difficult because you just can't pin your ears back. You also have to play the run. So that's what you're looking for. Dexter's the guy that I've been calling for improvement for an extended period of time. If you believe what they did with Brisker and what they did with Gordon and what they've done with Stevenson, if you believe that they've had some success developing some people, then you've got to have some faith in the defensive line coach being able to develop a defensive lineman that's got all the physical tools in the world. But they had to kind of change up mentally because of the horrid system he was playing in defensively. In Florida, not that it's a horrid system. It's just totally opposite of what you want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
So you kind of got to break him of those habits that he's been trained for a couple of years to play in. And that's why his improvement was always going to take time. He was always going to have to see the action. And there's only one way to improve, and that's by playing.
Right.
And he got a chance to play at the end of the year. I've got high hopes for Dexter, banking on the fact that he's got coaches that can develop players. That's what I got. And this offseason, it's going to be a full year in the playbook.
Yeah.
It'll be a full year working out with these guys. It's a year for him to relax a little bit now. Okay, that's what that first year was like. Whew, it was different. Now I get to come out here and I just get the ball, and hopefully that's going to end up happening. If that ends up getting taken care of, I know you got your veterans playing the nose tackle position. Yeah, Billingsley. And then after that, the one thing that they didn't really address is that opposite end, Montez Sweat. And your guy Ngakoue didn't prove anything last year for him to stick around, so you're happy to let him go. It's fine. You didn't do it here. Fine. Go do it someplace else, but it didn't happen here for you. So, I mean, did they address it? When you only got five picks and you waste one on a punter, what can you address? Right?
We haven't talked about
this. You got five picks. You waste one on a punter.
Yeah.
Then can you really address some of the things that need to be addressed? Then he ended up trading back in.
You were off.
He knew he had to address it.
Yeah.
So he went and he got himself a defensive end that he's hoping then to be able to develop. We'll see.
You were off the Friday of the punter fiasco when everybody was going at you on Twitter about your punter take.
I always, you know what I say about Twitter?
It's
where the idiots go to play. So I like the idiots play.
My favorite thing was I literally, when the clip got put out on ESPN, I go, I'm waiting for you guys to say that Yurko doesn't know football. I can't wait for this.
Did you ever?
The amount of comments underneath just going, well, nobody says he can't play football, but it doesn't mean that he's breaking down tape and he's what. And I was like, you have no idea what it's like to watch a football game.
Well, I said it that day. I crap more football out of my ass every morning than most people ever possess in a lifetime.
Absolutely.
And that's just the truth. They don't have to like that.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. And you ever go to a playground and you see that kid sitting in the sandbox eating sand and dirt?
Yeah.
That's Twitter. People on Twitter. Dude. Yeah, you remember him?
Yeah.
Want to tell the kid, hey, quit eating the sand, quit eating the dirt. It's not good for you. But he just sits there with that glazed look in his eye, and he's just sitting there eating sand and dirt. Those are people on Twitter.
Those are people on Twitter.
So, I mean, do you really care what they think?
If you gave an estimation of how much, just during your NFL career, not even after, how much tape you watched. How many hours of tape would you say that you watched in your NFL
I mean, too
career?
Much. And you're watching tape of others. We always got a chance when you're looking and cutting the opposing team, you're looking at what the defense players are doing too.
Right.
You're looking at the way they relate. And you know, you're seeing what guys are doing, what's becoming successful. You know, there's not a archetype like specific to anything. There's guys that look a thousand different ways, but can still find ways to be effective when on the football field. So, you know, that's one of the first things that you end up taking and finding out. And then it's just technique.
Yeah.
It's little technique things guys do. Why does a guy never get in trouble? Why does a guy never make a mistake? You know, then you got to find out why that happens. You know, what did he do? I always have a penchant for wrestlers. If
love a good wrestler.
If I find a guy and I look at him and I see if he's got a wrestling background, then that explains some things to me. Why there's a little bit more discipline there, or why he doesn't make mistakes, why he doesn't put himself in bad positions. Probably because he had a wrestling background.
Right.
If I would have a stigma going into anything, it would be that I would always look for big men that probably had wrestling backgrounds. Tackles, for me, I'd draft nothing but tackles.
Right.
Nothing but that. Don Mosebar was a tackle. You know that USC.
Mm-hmm.
They moved him to center when he was at the Raiders. Played center.
Oh, you're saying because the skill set right. of tackle. Well, I'm just saying
a tackle.
Yeah.
If I can play him at tackle, right? He can play tackle. Eventually, if he loses a little bit, I can move him into guard.
Right.
If he never has it, I can move him at guard. I'd never draft guard. I'd always be drafting tackles.
Mm.
If I was drafting over a 10-year period, you'd probably see me taking tackles. And sometimes taking chances on tackles. I would draft a defensive lineman that had great feet that I didn't think was a great defensive lineman and convert him the way they did Mark Bortz, the way they converted James Williams, the big cat.
Right.
Defensive player they converted to offense. Justin Strelzik was a defensive lineman with the Maine Black Bears in 1990. Got drafted in the 10th round. They converted him to tackle. Played 10 years in the league as an offensive tackle. You know, so there's a place. Cecil Gray was a defensive lineman. They converted to an offensive line tech. Why? He had great feet.
Yeah.
He had great feet. He was already athletic, can already use his arms. Now we got to teach him to slow down a little bit and to use some different technique, and they turned him into an offensive lineman. So that can happen, and that happens all the time. Most of the time, you're most unathletic. You're biggest, you're fattest, you're most rotund. End up on the offensive line, and that never changes for them once they go from high school to go to college.
Right.
Now, there's the exceptional guys that are, you know, are built like a blank brick house, Joe Thomas, and others that are across the offensive one in the
draft
line
this year.
Yeah, Patrick that look Paul, great.
Massive. Yeah. I did not expect him to go in the second round.
Yeah.
But he's, what is he, 6'7", 325 pounds.
I've got my own like convictions on what I like and where I like them. I like my receivers like Steve Smith.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me how tall they are, but will they fight for a football?
Absolutely.
Will they go after a football? How gritty are they? How wiry are they? You know, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a guy that wants the football, that demands the football, that gets the football. That's what I'm looking for. I don't like lopers. You know, L-O-P-E-R-S, yeah. Lope, not loafers, lopers. Guys that lope around the football, the long stride guys, those bother me a little bit. I need guys that can get in and out of breaks. I need guys that can separate. I need guys that got a little juice in them, a little wiggle, that can help my quarterback make the easiest throws possible. Absolutely. So, I mean, I do have kind of predetermining things. I'm probably not the best defensive back analyzer in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Right, okay.
Because a lot of my film was 7-on-7.
Right.
9-on-7. It was inside run. It wasn't all 22 all the time.
Right.
I wanted to dissect what was happening in the middle. So I would then have to hire some guys that were really good at the defensive back thing. You know, like my buddy Lenny McGill's been a scout in the league for the better part of, I'd say, 20-some-odd years.
Mm.
You know, if I was ever GM, I'd lean on Lenny McGill. I'd get him over and I'd put him in my department.
Right.
Have him run my department, you know, because I always respected Lenny as a player, got the most out of his talent, and then, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. But I think if you've got a weakness in certain areas, then you've got to find people that got strengths in those areas. So, and I'm sure Ryan Poles has surrounded himself with people like that.
I love it.
He surrounded himself with a punter that he loved, too,
he
somewhere.
He kept talking about, right, he's like, he's getting anxious. He wants to trade up. He wants to go ahead. And Ian's like, calm down, Ryan. We don't need to trade up. We've got five picks.
Sometimes you just let it play out. You know what I'm saying?
And I think it worked out. Just letting it play out. Sometimes you just
let it play out. And I think it was the a lot of talk and a lot of, you know, jumping up and down for something that seemed very obvious from the beginning. They were going to take Caleb Williams.
Yes.
And if Rome Odunze was there at 9, they were going to take him. That's it. And that's exactly how it ended up playing out.
Yeah.
And all the numbers and all this and everything, 1, 2, 3, 4 went out the way people had kind of settled on it.
Absolutely.
5 was a little bit different because Joe Alt went there at 5.
5 was a shock.
They wanted to protect,
was a shock.
They wanted to protect their quarterback, right? The next is Malik Jones. Then you got the other big Neighbors. Malik Neighbors. Thank you. Malik Neighbors. And the next one was Fushanu. Is that a
no?
No, it was the other big guy from
J.C. Latham.
Yeah, the big guy from Alabama. Latham.
And then Michael Penix, Yerk.
That's the one that's the stunner of all stunners.
That changed so much of the draft.
When Arthur Blank went in there and looked at Terry Fontenot, and he's like, what in the fuck did you just do?
Yeah.
And that's the conversation, whether anyone wants to believe it or not.
I was going to say.
That was the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
What in the fuck did you just do?
Yeah.
And he came back, and I'm going to tell you why. Atlanta's interior defensive line stinks.
Yes.
It was the worst in the league last year.
Yes.
Now, I don't know what they were statistically, the two defensive tackles on that team. I can tell you with my own eyes, they stunk.
Yeah.
They were terrible.
And we watched it here.
And there needed to be massive improvement. And you would have thought they could have gone back and got the top two defensive tackles in the draft and made yourself a situation like John Henderson and Marcus Stroud for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You think the Jaguars worried about defensive tackle for the better part of 10 years when they had them? This is like the 04 through 14.
Nothing.
Maybe even 03 through 13. Do you ever think they worried about anything with Big John Henderson and Marcus Stroud in the middle?
No.
They worried about nothing.
No.
We need nothing. We're going to playoffs. That's what we're going to do. And we got two big, massive defensive tackles in the middle. Atlanta could have done that for themselves. But instead,
quarterback.
And they didn't have to do it at 8. They could have called Minnesota and said, hey, right here, this is your chance. Come to us. We want your two picks. They could have gotten their two defensive tackles and said, we don't have to think about the biggest weakness on our team, which is defensive tackle, which may cause them problems still this year.
I think that's the strange part to me about like how the draft played out is I believe if not injured in college, Michael Penix is probably the second best quarterback in this draft. But he was injured in college. That did happen. You can't say that it didn't. Duncan runs on us. He is 24 years old right now. So you're talking about a guy who's probably not playing if Kirk Cousins plays out for 2 years. So you're going to start a 26-year-old quarterback in 2 years? Or are you just getting rid of Kirk, who you just guaranteed $180 million to?
Well, you're not getting rid of Kirk.
So – you know what I mean? Like
the pick didn't make sense unless Kirk Cousins gets hurt in the fifth game of the year and Michael Penix Jr. comes on and pulls a C.J. Stroud. That's the only way this pick, and Terry Fontenot looks like a genius.
Yeah.
The longer you wait to play him, the less success you have. 7-9 now for 3 years or 7-10?
Yes.
7-10 a couple years and then 7-9 the year before they went to 17. Yep. I can see that happening. I can see 7-9 happening again. Now, listen, Kirk Cousins is a very talented quarterback.
You got more offense.
How do I stop Kirk Cousins? How do I stop him?
Let him throw.
No. No. If he's never on the field, how does he win?
Oh, this is true.
If I'm sitting there handing the ball off between the softest underbelly of the Atlanta defense that you could ever find in the middle there, soft underbelly of their defense. Yeah.
Got him.
Well, what am I gonna do?
Just got him with the run all
12
day.
Play drive. Yeah. 12 play drive. 12 play drive. 12 play drive. I mean, what are we gonna do? What is a great corner gonna do against them handing the ball off? You're getting there late. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
So I think again the biggest problem they have is defensive tackle. There are two of them. They don't have them.
And you can run them up the middle.
You can just run them, period, because when that's weak, your linebacker's got to gamble to make plays.
Yeah.
When they gamble to make plays, they compromise the integrity of the defense. So not and they're causing all your problems when it comes to the run game. So It's Atlanta. It's not Chicago. Either way, they made the mistake. Adunze falls in the lap of Chicago. I don't know if you saw the footage from the draft.
Yeah.
You know, because it was, where was it this year? Detroit.
Detroit.
You saw the one guy in the Bears thing sprinting to see. He wanted to interrupt ESPN. I think he almost tripped over a cable and derailed the whole draft process. The guy in the Bears thing with the card, the card that said Rome Adunze. He's a death grip on that thing. He's going to like a baton, like Usain Bolt, the last leg of the 4x100, you know, by a 4x4. He's sitting there hauling ass trying to get there. He's not going to drop the baton. They handed that to the commissioner, and it was that pick took 3 seconds.
Was that our? I don't know if you remember this when Justin Jefferson fell.
Yeah,
and the Vikings are in the draft room. They're like, all right, we got to go corner here, or do we trade back? Should we trade back? Should we? Who'd they just take? Jefferson, yeah. Get the card in. Jefferson, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go, boys. Is that
let's was our do Justin it. Jefferson? Let's moment. Do it. Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that's exactly it. So listen, they it looked to be a grand slam for them. If it worked out, it worked out. It was a grand slam. For
yeah.
Them. That's what it was.
Yeah. Game changing draft.
And then third round pick is the kid from Yale. So that's a guy, you know, he was injured, but he's got physical Ryan tools. He's got physical tools, yeah, yeah. Right? Local kids got physical tools. All right. Now those physical tools have to come to realization, and we'll see what he's like when he's playing up against the big boys.
Do you think he's Braxton Jones insurance or possible replacement, or do you think he's possibly some guard? He played right guard
I think he's flexibility well. Insurance.
Do you think he's, yeah.
I think, or, you know, early on in his career, he'll probably be prime sixth guy. Mm-hmm. That's able to, if they can get him to be very versatile there. I mean, there's a strength and versatility for an offensive lineman. If you had your druthers, you'd only want to keep 7 active during the week so you can keep other positions active. Offensive linemen don't help you on special teams.
Right.
You know, and I've seen some teams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Sam Weich kept 10 offensive linemen active. How do you think his special teams work down in the
heat? Weren't they trying to do like the they were trying to do the hockey lineup offensive they were, line?
Offensive line. Like they came out with 2 full squads.
Yeah. And they wanted to swap in like 5 offensive linemen. And I was like, what the?
At the end, I played with Tony Mayberry. Tony Mayberry was the center. He was out of Wake Forest, I believe. Tim Ryan played with my brother at Notre Dame. Big Mike Sullivan went to Miami of Florida. Was from St. Francis de Sales out here. And I talked to those guys after that. I said, what in the hell is Sam Weich thinking? He said, well, if he can keep his offense, everybody substitutes everywhere else in the field. He goes, they never substitute the offensive line. His theory was if he can keep his offensive line stretch fresh, that they'd be okay. But every time you substitute somebody, you lose somebody with you lose something.
Yeah.
When a substitute, I go, your second offensive line is never going to be as good as your first offensive line, right. Even when they're tired.
He was trying to find 10 great offensive linemen.
Yeah, and I mean, that backfired on him that game. You know, you got you got to cut at certain positions then. You're cutting a linebacker, you're cutting a defensive back, you might be keeping a running back or receiver. You keep 5 running backs active because they help on special teams. You keep 8 defensive backs active, maybe even 9 because of special teams. You keep 7 linebackers active. Why? Because of special teams. That's why you keep them active, because it's important. Timmy Houck, the Weasel out of Montana, came out the same year I came out. The Weasel, okay, and that's what his nickname was. The Weasel played 14 years in the league because he could play special teams.
Right.
Marcus Wilson was a backup running back that was never going to be a starting running back, but he was a hell of a special teams player. So that's what you need. Tight ends, backup tight ends have to be able to play special teams, whether you like it or not. I remember Jackie Harris was running special teams. Jackie Harris was a starting tight end. He was exhausted after an offensive drive. You know, they'd gone like 8 plays. They'd gotten the ball to 50. It stalled. And he's on the side. He goes, I need a break. He put me as a wing. I'm over there as a wing. I had to report eligible. 64 reporting eligible. I'm out on a wing. I got Gil Bird, or I got somebody coming off the corner for the San Diego Chargers.
Right.
Back then, still San Diego. And I'm kick-stepping it back, praying to the heavens he doesn't put some speed on me, because I'm going to have to take him down. I can't give up a block punt. So I took him all the way back, got him out. I started to run. I'm hauling ass. I want to make a play. You know, there's no time I'm ever going to play on the punt team. I'm on ball kicks through the end zone. I'm like, oh, son of a horse. You know?
But see, if you had Tory Taylor on that team, it would have stopped at the 1 year. Yeah. It would have stopped at the 1.
All right, we're going to keep a chart. We're going to keep a chart. Gross average last year for your guy Taylor at Iowa. Go.
What was it?
Gross average.
43?
46.4. 46.5. Yeah. Gross average for Gil last year.
38.
46.1. Gross average.
Gross average. Gross average, not net. Not
so
net.
They both kicked the ball the same distance, right?
Right.
How many times inside the 10 for your guy, Gil? I don't know how they do it. Is it inside the 20 or
inside the 5? Inside the 10? I think
it's inside the 20. Inside 20.
Inside it was 13.
Yeah. It was 13 inside the 20.
Yeah.
How many times your boy put it inside the 20 for Iowa? Of course, remember, he probably had 175 punts in 12 games.
Yes, he did.
That's why they're infatuated. Yeah. He had a lot of punts because he played on a crappy team.
He's their offense.
Right. He's on a crappy team. So there's an over-reliance and there's an over-love on a punter.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get a guy. What's the team that punted the ball the least amount of times in the league last year?
Can't
NFL.
Be the Chiefs. Can't
17
be the
games. 47 times.
I'd say 49ers.
47 times they used their punter last year. And that's because they'd go for it on fourth down, too, like other teams.
Oh, Detroit.
That's the new thing, right? I don't know which one. It was 47 times. Mm. Another team was 56. I'm going to do the math. 56 divided by 17, 3, carry the 1. That's like 3.3 times a game. I drafted somebody in the 14th round for 3.3 punts a game in the fourth round. Yeah, for 3.3 punts a game. Really? I wasted a pick? Is that what I did? And then I get the smart-ass comments from the idiots on X, right? The idiots on Twitter.
Yeah.
The smart-ass comments, blah, blah, blah. Oh, this guy's going to be great. This guy's going to be this. This guy's going to be that. Oh, you're cool. This guy's going to be this. He's going to be that. 3.3 times. The Bears might only punt 51 times this year. And you wasted a fourth-round draft choice? And this is what I told them. I go, I don't need every player after him that went to hit. All I need is one player.
And it was a waste.
The one player that hits after they drafted Taylor, okay? One player. That guy hits, then the Bears screwed up royally, period. That's all I need. One player. Well, there was nobody. Oh, they're so deep at all positions. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Did the Bears win the Super Bowl last year? Was I sleeping when I was watching the Super Bowl and the final numbers finished 5-2? Was I asleep? Were the Bears in that game? Did I do a post game for that the Bears were in? No, they weren't. They only won 7 games last year. Don't tell me how tough it's going to be to make this team. It's a 7-win football team. Okay, that's what it is. So we'll see. I got them predicted already to win 11.
Okay, I like that.
Already. Based upon the 7 wins, the 3 that should have been there, a little bit of improvement, a horrific schedule that they got to play. Just terrible schedule.
Yeah.
Teams on this schedule are horrid.
That's
horrid,
what I said.
Horrid teams that they've got to play. They should, by accident,
win 9.
By accident, get to 11 wins. No, they should get to 11 by accident. Frisco's on that schedule. Yeah, Frisco's probably a tough team on there. You got Minnesota twice.
Yep.
Right? You got every has-been. You got the Jayville. Houston's a decent football team. Tennessee stinks.
Yeah. A lot of wide receivers, though.
Yeah.
A lot of wide receivers. I don't know if Will Levis is good, but a lot of wide receivers.
They stink.
I just, listen.
And whoever else is on that schedule. I forget who else is in the AFC South.
Realistically speaking.
Tennessee. Somebody else is in the AFC South.
You got the Cardinals on that schedule. You've got and without it pulled up in front of me.
The Rams are on the schedule.
The Rams are on the schedule,
AFC West, yeah.
Without looking at that schedule in totality, you've got 4 offenses on there that I would say are elite that you have to play. One of them is Detroit, and you kind of figured them out last year.
You play them well.
You play them ridiculously well.
Yeah.
So now you're talking about, I'd say, the Rams. I'd say the Packers probably have it figured out with their offense.
So it's 2 games against them. 2 games.
But same offense. And then you're talking about
Frisco.
Okay, so I'll give you 4 then. And Houston, if Houston can do it again.
Yeah.
So you got four offenses that you really are worried about four in a 17-game, five games.
Yeah, four offenses, five games.
you should be able to find some win.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even if you lose all those games.
Yeah.
You go 0-5 in those games. You can't tell me you can't go 11-1 in the rest of the crap that you have.
Yeah. And the punter will be a part of that? Or
Three punts a game. If Caleb's worth anything, it's going to be three.
That's the hope. That is the hope.
Fourth rounder.
This was my thing. This is my thing.
And it's done personal against the kid. I like the fact that he's Australian. Good for him. They're athletes down there. Hey, they're athletes down there.
Oh yeah,
they're a rougher brand.
They're
a tough bunch.
Rugby guys. Isn't that the
Australian rules football down there?
Yeah.
I don't know
if you get after it.
I don't know if you've ever seen a 40-meter hand pass, but I have in my life. Oh, yeah.
Still talking football?
No, Australian rules.
Oh, okay. You know, when they get through the
middle, the little guy with the white hat comes in, he goes through the middle. If he kicks it through the outside post and the big post, the guy comes up to the referee and he goes, only through one upright worth 1 point.
Right.
This one's worth the 6 points in the middle. Oh, you never seen Australian
I'm not an Australian rules football
guy.
It's fantastic.
I can sit down with him and talk Australian rules football. There's a movie that came out in the 80s called The Club, and it's a movie about Australian rules football. You need to see
it. I'm going to have to tap into
this. I was up late one night gambling on Australia B, which is just the horse racing out there, and I happened to be watching ESPN, and they had an Australian rules football game on, and I'm sitting there watching it, and it's a mark. They kick the ball. If you catch it, it's a mark. They blow the whistle. You get to back up from the mark, and then you get to take an approach, and you get to kick the ball either one of your players, or you advance it downfield, hoping one of your guys catches it, gets another mark so you can kick it through the uprights. This guy, and then when you run with the ball, you got to throw the ball on the ground like a dribble.
Right.
You can run so long, but you got to throw it down the dribble at once. It pops right back up in your hand. This guy was moving, running. He was hauling ass, and all of a sudden he went and punched it with his hand like a volleyball, like it was a volleyball. And the announcer was like, "Who? Jimmy McAllister? Oh, he's got himself a hand pass. It's a 40-meter hand pass." I mean, it's like he was mesmerized by it. The ball just kept floating in the air, and it floated perfectly to his guy.
Yeah.
Now, on a hand pass, you don't get a mark. They don't blow the whistle dead.
Okay.
Now the play continues.
Oh.
So, I mean, listen, with Taylor, I can break down all the Australian rules football.
I got to get in. See,
And it's not.
This is not rugby, then.
Listen.
This is different from rugby.
This is Australian rules football. Not only that.
In with this.
Hey, not only that, okay, but I can say nothing I say is against the kid.
At all.
The kid has done nothing. The kid is innocent.
Right.
The kid didn't know Chicago was going to pick him. They picked him. And now he's here. Now he falls in a great situation, right?
Yeah.
51 punts. The over-under on 51. Where do you think it'll reside? If they're worth anything, the Chicago Bears this year, he'll be lucky to reach that number.
Let me ask you this before we get you out of here. You were on a defense that, right, you're coming on after the punt. Is there anything that the punt can do, right? If it's a great punt, does that fire you guys up? If it puts you in a great position to go, does that help at all, right? But Ryan Poles talks about this guy. This is a weapon. He says this is a weapon.
I mean, certainly it helps the defense. If you get a guy and you pin him at the 10-yard line, the pure statistics of it all,
right?
Statistics that have existed for years. Anytime a team starts the ball on the 10, the success of them scoring a touchdown is at a very low percentage. The further you move it up the football field, right?
Higher percentage.
But that's to say that if you pinned on the 95, that the Bears never gave up a 95-yard drive last year.
And that's what I'm saying.
Did
yes.
it happen?
Yes.
They've given up drives. Yes. It's theoretically you get pumped up and boom. But what happens when you do it on the road and the crowd's not with you? You know, and the crowd's not going crazy.
Yeah.
Now you're on the road, your punter pits him to the 5. You still got to go out and play defense. When the ball's at the 20 to 15 to 10 or to 5, you still got to play defense.
Now you're 6'4", 220 for our punter? Can we play him at linebacker?
No.
Can we get any extra out of him at linebacker, maybe? No. Oh, I love it. I forgot about the whole punter fiasco.
Remember, though, it's not against the kid.
Yes. It's against the pick.
It's against the philosophy.
Yes.
What were you thinking and what were you doing? That's what it's against. It's not a personal shot at Ryan Poles. But I said that the pick was a pick of arrogance.
Yes.
thinking that you're further along than you actually are. And there's been a couple of comments that I've heard. Oh, it's going to be tough to make this football team. Oh, it's going to. Well, not really.
Depends on what position you play.
If you got somebody come out and perform, you don't have 25 Pro Bowlers on this team. I mean, what are you thinking here? What kind of, again, I know you picked these guys and you feel real good about them, okay? But let's not get crazy about what we have on this football team. They're still in the process of proving who they are.
Right.
That's still a process. They're in the middle of it. They're not at the end of the rainbow. They're approaching the apex on the bridge where we're going to figure out who the hell they are.
Right.
When they get to the bottom of the bridge, I hope it's a playoff football team.
That's the goal.
I hope it's not a disappointing football team. That'd be a problem.
I need a Super Bowl where Tory Taylor pins a team on the five and the Bears get a safety to win it now. That's the only way to save it.
I've been a part. I've been a part of it. I've been part of teams. We got a safety against the LA Rams in Milwaukee in 91 or 92. Brian Noble broke through and got it. Yeah, right. Brian Noble got through there and made the play. So we've gotten some safeties in our day.
Yeah.
Against Detroit, though, you were afraid to pin them on the five because you're afraid Barry's going to go for 95. You're taking deep breaths.
You think you got him in the end zone, all of a sudden he's in the other end zone?
They used to run their own slip screen where he'd go to block, and he'd slip the guy who was blocking, and then Mitchell or Dave Craig or Eric Kramer, whoever the hell was on their team, would just float the ball to him, and now he's in open space with two blockers in front of him. Come on. That's unfair.
The great Barry Sanders. Hey, we appreciate you guys tuning in.
Held him to negative yards rushing.
Held him to what?
Negative yard rush.
Negative yards rushing.
Playoff game, December 31st, 1994. 13 rushes, negative 1 yards. The only time he's been held to negative yards rushing in his career.
Ooh. Did you get a grab on him in the backfield?
Boom. I tackled him twice that day.
Ooh.
Twice. I was going
all
up against
over Barry Sanders.
I was going up against Kevin Glover that day. Monster. We committed everything to stopping him. He said, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us for your quarterback.
Yeah.
You are not. Herman Moore is going to beat us today.
You were selling out.
Yeah. Brett, don't pay the Perryman. He was going to beat us that time. Remember don't him? Don't pay the Perryman. Brett, don't pay the Perryman. Miami of Florida.
It was a Walter Payton game plan. Just whatever you do, rush everybody at him.
Our corners were coming off the corner. And they got us on a sluggo in that game. They had us where we committed to the run. And their guy was down the field. They missed him. They missed him.
That's why you put it on the quarterback.
That game ended 16-12. It's not like Brett put up 1,000 points that game. Yeah, yeah. 16-12. We held him in negative yards rushing. We barely won the game. There you go.
He was that great.
Yeah.
He was that great. Yerk, appreciate you coming through another week. As always, hit that like button, subscribe to the page.
51 punts. 51 punts, fourth rounder.
Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. I can't wait to see Twitter after this. I can't wait.